Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You are listening to Total EM. The podcast today is all about practice. And this isn't just for a student, so don't tune out if you're a preceptor or someone who's clinically practicing, because this is for you too. This is actually for anyone who's involved with medicine, not just emergency medicine. What I want to talk about today is something that has always been in the back of my mind. This is something that I talk about frequently to anyone who will listen to me. And that is that practice makes permanent. Notice I did not say that practice makes perfect. And there's an important reason why. Because only perfect practice would actually make perfect. Everything else is less than that. You're not going to have perfect results if you're not doing it perfectly. And this is something that, yes, we probably all realize and will acknowledge to some degree. And especially once you think about it, yeah, that makes sense. But I want this to be in the front, not in the back of our minds, but in the front of our minds, that practice makes permanent and only perfect practice makes perfect. Why this matters to us is because so much of what we do in the medical world, we talk about training and we talk about experience and we talk about trying to get better all the time. We have students who constantly go through the house of medicine, but never really understand the challenges of medicine. And by that, I mean that we don't train people like many other specialties or professions do. And I want to bring up the first example, which is firefighting. Firefighting and medicine actually have a lot of crossover. In fact, some of us, such as myself, do both. But the way we actually take care of our training is very different. So I'm a training instructor for the fire departments I've been on and currently work with. And one of the big things that I do on the firefighting side of things is to be a training instructor. And training for me is very important in the fire service because just like in medicine, this is life or death. This is the stuff that can not only hurt yourself, but hurt your friends or hurt the people you're trying to protect. So something that I talk about all the time when it comes to training is that you don't train until you get it right, but you train until you cannot get it wrong. And this is an adage that we use in firefighting a lot, but I do not hear when it comes to medicine. You may ask, why is that a big deal? And I'd simply tell you why. Because when you only practice enough to get it right, but not practicing to the point where you pretty much cannot get it wrong, you're asking for errors. If I teach someone a simple procedure, such as doing an IV, but I only taught them a couple of times, basically I made sure that, yeah, they could put in an IV, and that was it, that's not good enough. Because when I let them loose, they'll know how to do it, but they'll get it wrong a lot of times. They may forget, they may stumble around with the materials. They will not become an expert at it, or at least proficient with it. What I want them to do is to practice it so many times that they're not going to make mistakes on the little things. They're going to get it right as much as possible. Still, sometimes they may make errors, but they should also be able to know how to troubleshoot those errors. One of the big things that we screw up in medicine so royally that I do not see with other things, including firefighting, now given some places are going to be better than others, and I understand that, both for the firefighting and for medicine, but you need experts who are there constantly as coaches at first. Maybe not there all the time. Maybe it's going to be really hard to do that one-to-one training that would be so ideal, but get the experts to at least teach those students the basics, to make sure that they understand the fundamentals of a procedure. And this is really comes down to that whole see one, do one, teach one. That's bull. This whole see one, do one, teach one thing is in medicine, and it really doesn't make sense, especially when you talk about certain skills. Let's take, for example, central lines. Yeah, we spend a little bit of time teaching how to do a central line. You may have seen it once or twice. Then the preceptor hands it over to you and says, now it's your time to do it. You practice it once or twice. Well, now you have a more junior person come along and you're going to teach them? No, this is a dangerous thing. Central lines are potentially high-risk procedures. So why would we do it this way? Why not work better on it? in the podcast post that goes along with this on the actual blog side of the things, I do mention intubation specifically in the post. And that's because this is such a classic one. And actually, I was watching a video just recently about a new learner, you know, someone who's actually clinically practicing, but someone who's a new learner at intubation. The intubation actually went fairly well, but there were some very, what I would call rookie mistakes that were going on, things that should have been well practiced and well performed prior to ever putting a laryngoscope in that person's hands for the first live intubation, just asking for some trouble to happen. Luckily, it didn't. The patient did really well, and so did the person doing the actual procedure. But it comes back to the point of, how could we have done this better? And that's really what inspired me to talk about this now. How could we, as preceptors, done a better job getting that person to be better at the intubation so that they didn't make those mistakes then and they could actually focus on the higher level skills, which is what they should be doing when they're practicing on a live patient. This should not be a time to talk about the basics and make sure the handle's held the right way and that we're putting the tube in the right position, stuff like that. It should be more about, okay, for this airway, these are the intricacies thereof. This is how we make sure we fundamentally assure us that you understand the basics, and then we capitalize on that. Because when you waste time on live patients doing things that could potentially be dangerous if they don't even get the basics right, well, they're not getting the full chance to improve and do what they need to do in that case. Instead, they're spending time on the basics and they miss the big things, the big pictures. They can't learn as much. Those are the types of things you could do in simulation. So just as kind of a basic way of talking about this, let's talk about the classic way a lot of people get taught to intubate. They may spend part of a day in a classroom with one or two instructors in their big class of 40, 50 or more people, where that instructor is walking around the room, kind of watching among a few different mannequins, trying to make sure to catch the big mistakes and then reemphasize those, but never really giving that one-to-one time that's so desperately needed in skills, especially early on. This is where we get into the deliberate practice and stuff like that Scott Weingart talks about after an interview recently, which we'll include also in the show notes because it's such a powerful interview. And I don't want to talk too much about deliberate practice here because it's so well covered there. Instead, what I want to talk about is you get to that level and then you start going on rotations and you watch one or two intubations and yeah, you kind of understand the atmosphere of the room and understand this is an important thing to get right. And, you know, you start talking to your instructor or preceptor a little bit and they say, yeah, we can go ahead and have you do this. So you do it and you fumble through it and you figure out how to eventually get it in. You're getting coached, probably not in the best way because usually they're asking, well, what do you see? What do you see? What do you see? Well, what do I see? I don't know because I haven't had the proper time to get good at this. And so, yeah, you may get that tube and you may get it done, but you don't really feel confident afterwards because you're getting yelled at for the most part. At least you feel like you're getting yelled at. And you just simply don't feel like you got the best opportunity to do the best job you possibly could. And you're spending more time trying to make sure you did the basics right versus actually capitalizing on the more complex portions of this very important procedure. Instead, what I imagine would be the way to do this is you actually take that same scenario. So instead, you focus on one-to-one instruction from the beginning and you space repetition this. This is not a one-time, one-hour session in a classroom. This is something where we're going to focus on it in a classroom setting. We're going to talk about the basics. The next time, we're going to actually practice some of the skills. Then we're going to focus on some micro skills. And micro skills are things where maybe it's the little things that trip us up or the little things to make the bigger picture. If you can break down any sort of procedure or skill into a series of micro skills and then bring it all together, you'll get that much better at it. And so you do that. You practice the micro skills and you get better at each micro skill. And then you turn around and you get told to now combine all of that picture and use the things that are really going to matter the most. You actually focus on the overall procedure with emphasis on making sure you get all the parts right and in the right order and comfortably. And doing that to a point where you're proficient. You're not just doing it good enough to get it passed, but you're doing it so that you demonstrate proficiency in that manner. After that, then you're allowed some time to practice maybe on your own to help develop things further. And then you get the opportunity to get rechecked every so often, again, with some instructor kind of overlooking things, making sure things are going well. Again, more deliberate practice. Then we actually finally get on rotations or finally get a chance to intubate an actual living patient. Well, now you're just showing that you understand the basics, but then you can also start learning some of the intricacies and get some of the finesse into a procedure. The things that we simply just can't teach you in a classroom or on a mannequin. Obviously, this is something that's going to lead to a lot more time, but people are going to get better at it and they're going to feel safer with it and your patients are going to be safer as a result. And you, as the person who's teaching it, if you're not the learner in this case, are going to get better at feeling like they are actually learning and be able to focus on some of the bigger points. Yes, time is an issue, but this is stuff that you could spend some time on, and the learner should be able to devote some time to once they understand the basics, which may not take long, but we need to at least offer those opportunities to them. Now, another thing besides time that's a big one to deal with is the challenge of how to practice, because so many people talk about simulation and do we need to have this high fidelity simulator? Most likely not. Probably we can work on the micro skills with just the tools and then combine said tools with mannequins. They don't have to be high fidelity. They can be a simple airway mannequin when it comes to intubation. And only with time do we actually focus on the overall picture. And maybe then we had the high fidelity simulator, or even better, we could even go to a cadaver to develop this further. But this is something that, again, we need to be able to have this slowly progress. And with time, we can start going into the mental models and stuff like that. So what about mental simulation? This is something I would not recommend for a new person. Someone who is new at a skill who hasn't done this at all on any sort of practice level with, say, a simulator or watching it in real life or going through videos, they need to have something to develop a basis on. Because if I tell a new learner to do a procedure that they've never done before and mentally rehearse it in their mind, they're probably not going to figure it out. They're probably not going to get it the right way. You need to be able to see the videos and then try and practice it in some form or fashion, possibly with some sort of simulation device, whether it's a mannequin or even something impromptu or developed on your own. But there has to be something to actually develop the skills. And then once you've got the basic understanding, the basic skills, and the basic abilities, then you can start practicing your mind. And if you're really good at it, you can slowly develop your own scenarios to further enhance those skills. Again, those are all a bit challenging and basically it takes us a lot of time, but there are also going to be those scenarios where we simply cannot do a lot of practice on live patients in a proctored setting. Let's take, for example, sticking with the airway route, the surgical crike. Well, a surgical crike isn't going to happen that much, thankfully, but it is something that we have to be knowledgeable in if we're going to manage the airway. And this could be something as simple as we need to be able to practice it to a certain degree. Well, this is something that you're not going to be seeing a lot, hopefully, again, in most cases, to the point where you can do the observation and then practice role with a live patient. The first time you may actually do a surgical crike on a patient, maybe years after your training. So how do you get good at it? Well, first step is you practice it and you learn it the same way with deliberate practice as we talked about with the other methods. But now you focus more on the simulation and keep revisiting the topic because it's not something you're doing regularly. For example, in some EMS systems, this may simply be intubation. If you're doing less than one intubation a year, it is very, very difficult to be able to keep up that skill set. And we see that with a lot of great EMS agencies. Is that wrong? No, but these are high risk, low frequency events. And the difference with some low frequency but high risk events is, do we have the time to think it through or do we not have the time to think it through? If we have the chance to think things through and practice this well in advance, we're going to be okay. We just simply have to get knowledgeable and practice it. But if we do not, this is where it gets dangerous. And so with the surgical crike, if you can understand the basics, maybe watch some videos on it, get some time with deliberate practice with an expert watching over you, and then graduate your way up, yes, revisit, try and learn, try and get as many opportunities as possible. Maybe you can go to an airway course where they have cadavers, so you can practice that way too. So the first time you're cutting flesh isn't on a patient, it was with a cadaver, and then you graduate up from there. If we do these types of things, we can excel and become better. Again, as I mentioned in the beginning, this is not just for students. This is for those who are teaching or those who are also in the same boat. We all have skills that we could definitely improve on. There are things that I know I can improve on and that I could do this model. And that's what I work towards. But obviously it's time consuming and difficult, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't try. So basically, to summarize, we need to change the way we practice our skills and develop. And this is something that we're seeing right now. I see this in my clinical practice. I see this when I watch others. And I even see this on videos. Like I said, this is part of the reason why I'm talking about it now is because I watched a video of this airway management. I thought, man, if someone had just spent a little more time teaching this learner the basics, they would have nailed that airway, no big deal, and they probably would have learned more about the intricacies of that particular intubation versus wasting time on the basics when they could have mastered that in advance. So by training from the ground up, we can develop a concise approach with micro skills and then mastery of the basics, and then application in a controlled environment with an expert to assist us, and then we can start doing it more on our own. I know this is a big topic to cover, and we're going to talk about this actually more in the upcoming months as I'm going to have some guest speakers on who really want to cover a lot of educational stuff. If this is stuff you don't like as much and you want us to keep at the clinical, which I'm more than happy and I really love the clinical stuff, I think we still need to listen to this and we still need to cover this because we don't talk always enough about the art of actually learning or the psychology of it or the cognitive side of things. We just sometimes spend too much time on the clinical. And like I said, we're going to talk about all that. Don't feel like we're going to drop off here. But I just want you to understand why we're having these types of discussions. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.